whatever, and or have a little reception up at the place. And the I'm talking, Frank, we would mention like the series or the seller's market over there, because we know those people and it's really good food. And I'm going to say, well, we'd have 60 people eating three times a day. You know, they bring lunch into the seminar a couple times, but the people do the seminar. By and large, you're talking, you know, 60 people times 7, times 5, times 3. It's 900 meals. It's a lot. Not to mention,
they brought in spouses,
yeah,
and friends,
yeah,
too.
Well, then there'd be two people, and a lot of them stayed at that. If you were single, if you were by yourself, a lot of people. What's the name of the place I've stayed there before? The Club Quarters, where the room is like the size of, there's just a spot for you to hang your head with a TV and a bathroom and a shower. I mean, that's it, because that's all it's designed for. You're going to be out the whole time. You're going to walk in. You're going to crash, which is what most people do when they're on the road or in a business meeting or anything anyway. I stayed in one in New York. It was interesting. But
well, you're bigger than most people. You're taller.
Right. Well, I mean,
so it's made for somebody 6 feet tall, not 6'5".
Well, let's just say that if you couldn't have done it before there were flat-screen TVs. Because if you had one of those big, fat TVs, I don't know if it would have fit. So what do you make of, I mean, something like yesterday, all of a sudden the market is, I don't know if you watched mid-morning, Frank, when we were still kind of deciding which way we were going to go. The NASDAQ futures are up like 65, and it couldn't have been 4 minutes. They're unchanged, and then they're down. They were down for maybe a nanosecond, and then all of a sudden they're back up 65, 70, 75, and then never really looked back all day. There was really, the last week, every time there was any kind of a rally, it was like whack-a-mole. Somebody whacked the top of the rally. Now, yesterday, early in the morning, it became somewhat obvious that we were probably going up because there was a bid underneath. Now, whether it was central banks or whether what it was, or people just thought it was too low. But the NASDAQ, I mean, we have a lot of people that trade it here on our IB platform. And, I mean, stuff is, you know, you're watching some guys are doing one and two lots and up 4,000, down 4,000. Like, my God. It's crazy trading. I mean, you have to really have your, I can't imagine somebody doing it without having some options behind them, Frank, but people do. When I say that, if you were belong the calls and the puts, at least if you buy the E-mini lower or sell it higher, if you're totally wrong, you've got the put or the call covering you, but most people don't do that, I don't think.
Well, and quite often it all depends if you're buying and selling that E-mini to adjust or to take a profit.
Well, if you,
because with options you can, you know, be trying to pick a top and actually making a taking profit.
Right. Well,
and that hedge, but it depends if you're long or short premium. And right now, premiums are so high, the last thing you want to do is be long premiums for volatility when the VIX is sitting at 47.
Right. Well, when you go long premium, okay, there's only really, to be honest, two types of option positions in terms of long and short premium. No matter how many bazillion options you have in there, you take a look at the graph of the whole position. You either have a position where movement helps you and time decay hurts you, or the other way around. So if you,
well, there's three things we look at when we trade options nowadays. We look at the effect of changes in price in the underlying, which,
right,
is delta and gamma. Changes in the effect of time, which is theta, which is decay, and changes in the effect of implied volatility, which is vega. Now, you and I used to have to worry about rho or interest rate changes back when interest was 14 or 15%.
Right. Well, now there's somewhat none of that. But if you were to say, for instance, you're doing the, I'll just use round numbers, the S&P 500, if you take like the S&P 500 and say, okay, it's Monday morning, the straddle for Friday night for the 300, the call and the put for Friday night is, say, let's say it's some ridiculous number, it's $15 because it's real high, the volatility. If you buy that, you're buying it because you're saying, okay, I think by Friday night we're going to move more than $15. Right? Well, most weeks, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily, because that's like 5%, for God's sake. But if you did, that's one way of doing it. You just buy it and you hold it. Or if you've got a lot of money and you're not one of my clients, you can sell it and just hope that nothing happens. You go on vacation for a week, couple comes back, it's 300, and you suck up to 15 bucks. But that's a long week. Or you can buy it and say, I'm going to trade E-minis all week, because if I buy, say, 10 of these things, now I can trade up to 5 E-minis or whatever the ratio is. I'd have to think of it for that ratio. I haven't done that in a while, Frank. But now it says that when the market goes way down, I can buy 5 E-minis and still be covered by the puts I'm long. Then if it races back up, I can sell 10 because now I'm short 5. In other words, I'm gonna be so good this week that I'm going to be able to make more money trading E-minis against my position. I'm going to make more than 15 bucks. And I'm going to say most weeks that's a zero-sum game. You can't win at that, Frank. However, in the last few weeks, because of the movement, I think you could have won easy at that. With the bounces back and forth. Although last week was pretty much all straight down, and yesterday was straight up. But what I'm saying is, it now gives you some protection if you're buying the E-mini, as long as you don't buy, twice as many minis as you have puts covered, right? So it depends.
Exactly.
It could give you a background. So if you lose the 15 bucks on your straddle, but you make 20 trading like a madman or madwoman, then you're up 5 bucks and you had your protection. I mean, you can definitely do that. I mean, there's that possibility. But the, by and large, being long a straddle at this particular volatility is a very difficult game, right? Matter of fact, I mean, because someday...
It's all right to be very dangerous, or the volatility.
Right.
Yeah, yesterday's close. But then remember on Friday night, we were up 5%, down 5%, up 3%, down 5%, up 3%, or something silly like that.
Well, plus the...
For a net down 1% on the opening.
Well, even now Friday night, I had trouble even finding out where the E-minis and stuff closed. You know what I'm saying? Because the close at 3 o'clock was like 20 points difference than 3:15.
Oh, I think it was more.
Yeah, it might have been more. It might have been 30 points.
And then they go through a closing rotation, which is
right
something from another world.
Right, that's something even from another world. So, by the way, I was just mentioning to our girl, Angelica, who has, of course, the very trendy slacks on today because she has school with the rips in the knees. And I explained to her, Frank, that in our generation, you actually wore your pants long enough to where the rips were naturally generated. You didn't buy them like that.
No, we did not.
Just saying. I mean, nobody. Can you imagine in those days where people were so frugal, when your grandmothers from the Depression were still alive, going out and buying a pair of ripped jeans?
No, I once went to, when I went to Northwestern for grad school, I stayed at my roommate's house from college, and their grandmother from Ireland lived with them, and I went to class one day, and she mended all my jeans.
My grandmother did mine too. We had a pair that was so dead that she would take the patches off there because you didn't want the wrong areas to be open, right? So you had to be
right.
What do you make of the huge rally yesterday? Was because of the market being down so much, and we've had these before. But in terms of reality, when you see more and more stuff getting canceled, and I don't really know, Frank, what is the damage to the economy of, all of a sudden these shows stopping and people not doing this, and they're talking about now that they went read the fine print. I saw this morning at the Summer Olympics. They don't have to cancel them. They're considered the 2020 Olympics. So if they think there's a problem, they can have them in October and just move them, which to me would make perfect sense rather than just cancel them. But
especially after spending billions of dollars to build venues.
Why don't they just put them in L.A. every year with all the universities and stuff around there? There'd be virtually no new construction needed. And put the friggin' winners in Innsbruck where you actually do have a bobsled track and stuff. I mean, I don't get it.
Well, Innsbruck was ideally located. It's central. Yeah. I lived there for 9 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you a skier or were you a tending bar?
Yeah, it was Notre Dame sophomore year abroad.
Okay, all right. That's cool. You actually had to learn the language.
It was very cool. But I learned how to ski there, and you know, but they'd have international ski jump competitions, international ski competitions, bobsled. They did everything.
What
ice skating?
What did you? You had actually. No, the language was taught in what? Or the class?
German.
Yes, yeah, Deutsch. See, I couldn't have gone there because I don't know. I don't know any languages. I don't know English that well. I would have.
We had an intensive language our freshman year, and then we did 3 months in Salzburg. Intensive German, and the only place I had a smart roommate that told me what they were saying.
I'm pretty good on German. German is Ein Bier
and noch ein Bier.
What's that?
Another.
Oh,
noch eine.
All right, well, there you go. All right, so
and the nice thing about Innsbruck, it's in the Tyrol, and it's what they call a Bauern dialect or a farmer's dialect, where I was.
What does that mean?
Nobody corrected my pronunciation or my basic grammar.
Now in Rome, they taught you in English, right? I would have had to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Now
everybody speaks, English in Europe.
I think the lady who has been on the show a couple times from. She works for the engineering school of Michigan, Jean Morabito. I think she went to Innsbruck as well. You know, no, she didn't. She went to Angers,
which is France.
Yes. Now there's like
Innsbruck is now closed. They moved the German program to Berlin.
Well, now you can go
Innsbruck. It's not sexy enough to attract students.
That's bizarre. But now most of these schools, you can go pretty much anywhere. I mean, there's my niece went to. This pissed my brother off big time, as well it should have, I think. She, of course, doesn't get into Illinois, for whatever reason, because they want more tuition. So she ends up going to Wisconsin, which obviously is a terrific place.
Very good school.
But she goes her junior year to Italy. Well, it turns out, at that time, there was a tuition, same price, Indiana or Illinois, right? I don't think they have that anymore, but in those days they did. So her program was actually an Indiana program. So my brother, of course, says, hey, if it's an Indiana program, she's really going to Indiana for the year, why isn't my tuition like she was going to Indiana? Nah, that's not going to happen. Okay. What do you suppose, we're talking about page two here, why do you suppose Iran is having so much problem with this virus? I mean, a lot of people are starting to. Britain is having all kinds of issues with their, the army's having issues now, and they're talking about, they're making huge preparations in Britain as well. I don't know why that the cases in China continuing to decline. It's so whether they're not just telling us or what they're doing, but now it's
it's my understanding that some of the upper people in the government in Iran are having problems,
right?
Infections, and then that goes back to that rumor of a week ago. Which you and I talked about, of whether or not this was a weaponized virus that somehow got loose.
The right wingers are all over there. They refuse to.
Oh, I know. And so, China gave it to North Korea, which then, North Korea gives everything to Iran, and somebody mishandled it along the way.
Yeah, somehow it got here. The UK government publishes their battle plan. To tackle the spread of warning that up to a fifth of the workforce could be off sick during a peak period. Given that the data is still emerging, we are uncertain of the impact of an outbreak on business. In a stretching scenario, it is possible that 1/5 of employees may be absent for work during peak periods. This may vary for individual businesses. Well, that's a lot. UK's Prime Minister said Tuesday that in the worst possible scenario, the army is ready to step in, assuming they're not sick. Johnson warned on Monday that there could be a very significant expansion of the outbreak among the population. Currently, there are 39 cases. You have to wonder, everybody wants to be prepared, but I'm not exactly sure. Do these guys know something we don't? When you only have 39 cases and you're sort of talking about the entire population getting it, that's kind of a reach, Frank. I mean,
remember what I said yesterday? Beforehand, everybody over-prepares, and after the fact, if it becomes true for a pandemic, you underprepared.
Well,
so it's risk reward, just like trading. You're analyzing the risk and the reward of what you do.
Well,
people like you and me look at the risk first.
Well, you'll sit there and say, okay, if 100,000 people get it, how many of them need to be hospitalized? 5,000. Okay, so on any given day, how many empty beds do we have in hospitals?
How many ventilators do we have? It's viral pneumonia if you get hit by it.
Yeah, how many? Okay, then you just ratchet it up a notch. Not only how many hospital beds do we have, but how many hospital beds do we have in what we consider to be a pulmonary intensive care type of area? And I'll bet it's not 5,000. So, okay, now what do we do? Do we have hospitals that have beds? Do they have... my question is, this is...
We got a huge hospital in Blue Island.
Right.
And who pays for this?
Right, who pays for it? Well, now suppose you walk into, like, Northwestern's new place. Well, I'm going to say, without putting a percentage that I'd be wrong at, some incredible percentage of the hospital has nothing to do with patients. Now, is there some sort of a plan that in that building, that if all of a sudden you had to put twice as many patients, can you boot the chairman out of the corner office and put four patients in there or not? Or is there some kind of a plan to use the massive marble lobby that cost $90 bazillion? Can you put people in there? And I don't even know, Frank. Is there like fallback positions for these places, or we have a building
that's... No, we got rid of the people who are in charge of planning this stuff, pandemics, at the national level.
Well, it doesn't seem like the Brits have, because they're all over this thing, it looks like, this morning. Boris Johnson's running around in his yellow outfit. Does that mean he's all right?
Well, I don't think he can count on any help from the EU.
Germany's number of coronavirus cases rises, 188 up from 157. Beijing, Shanghai step up restrictions on travelers from overseas. So evidently you can't get from Wuhan to Beijing, can you?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think you can. Meanwhile...
And yesterday, the health commissioner, I guess it's King County, where Seattle is, said that they think the disease has been percolating, as I think was his word, for weeks.
Right, well, they thought the...
If not months, in Seattle. So part of the problem is that, 80% of the people are carriers. So how many people really have it? What's the true morbidity and mortality rates? We don't know.
No. And I don't even know if that's good news or bad news. If it's been there a lot longer and we only have a few number of cases, is that good? Or is that the calm before the storm? How do you know?
I don't know. I mean, my family had a flu, horrible hacking cough about 3 weeks ago, and it's hanging around. And the question is, was it influenza too, or did we have COVID-19? Probably influenza too, but who knows?
Well, Carl was mentioning last week that he had something a couple weeks ago. He said it's exactly what they say this is. But it took about a week. I think this takes a little longer I don't think you test negative for a while in this. I don't think it's more like, it's one of the things I was reading about in China, that they keep talking about 14 days and you're good. And they're saying 14 days, maybe you're not good. It might be like 18 or 20.
They don't know because they don't have enough tests. You can't test us multiple times.
Right, SP Futures.
Now, I just heard on the radio this morning as I was getting set to talk to you that we should have a million test kits by the end of the week.
Well, let's hope they're all good. SP Futures up 20. Dow Futures up 235. NASDAQ Futures up 96. Frank, thank you very much. Talk to you next week.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV. Angelica Lysenko on the board in her stylish slacks. Just saying. So the pants with the holes in them cost less or more?
I think it depends what kind of pants.
good answer. S&P futures up 20.75 at the moment. Dow futures up 232. Second day of the bounce. NASDAQ futures up 93. Conflicting stuff on the coronavirus. It's a seems to be not as many new cases in China, or reported cases. A lot of other countries, especially Iran, seem to be having a very increasing problem. So it's kind of depending on if you're negative or thinking, you can find a lot of ways to be negative thinking. If you're positive thinking, you can find some of that as well. Around the rest of the world, we've got the DAX up 306. 2.5%. I'm sure some of that is catch-up. FTSE up 142.1%. CAC round up 109.2%. As we've decided, we're even going to cure diseases with more money in this system. Wow. I didn't know we could do that, but apparently we can. Nikkei, however, down 261, 1.2%. Shanghai up 21.7. Hang Seng down 6. Call that one flat. They're confused there. Bonds 114, so up a little bit. When I say the bonds of the 10-year rate. Bund minus 0.58, so that's up 3 basis points as well. Japan back up to minus 0.11. I still kind of used to saying this. It was minus 0.14 yesterday. We've got oil up another $1.39, so back to 48.14. It's better than the 45, but it wasn't the 52 where we started this whole thing. Brent up 123, 53.13. Natural gas 179, RBOB 157. We've got gold up another $8, 1603, so back over 1600. Silver up 9 cents, 1683, nowhere near the over 1800 it was a week and a half ago. Copper 258, still going the wrong way if you're looking for a copper rally to make you get long China. So that was a long-winded deal there. Individual stocks, we had Apple up like $20 yesterday. It's up another 220. Other stocks in the Dow, we had Goldman Sachs down 240. That's kind of it. UTX down 107, and United Health down 276. AV, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning, friends. First week of March has kicked off, and it means we're only 12 weeks away from summer. Isn't it exciting?
Yeah,
I think it is.
Plus, it was actually a little bit of light we came in this morning.
Exactly, yeah. 33 degrees currently in Chicago, partially cloudy in the morning. Mixed sun and clouds throughout the day with gusty winds developing in the afternoon. Increased clouds with showers are expected later at night. Chance of rain is 50%, and the highest of the day is 48, the lowest 34. 49 degrees in Phoenix this morning, cloudy skies will give way to generally sunny skies for the afternoon. Sky is clear at night, and 74 degrees is the highest of the day and the lowest 49. In traffic, Eisenhower East traffic is getting heavier from Western to 9094 interchange, as well as 94 West from West Randolph down to 31st Street, and Stevenson South from Harlem up to I-90 West.
AV, why don't I do the sports and you go answer the door?
One moment. No accidents reported, by the way.
All right. How's that for a deal? You go answer the door and I'll do the sports. The sports, the Bulls won last night. Joel, are you with us? I don't know if Joel's with us yet. No, he is not. But the big news, I think, was that as we are continuing to talk about the Olympics, they have not. They said that even if they were to cancel them.
You got me?
Yeah, we got you.
Good morning. What do you want to talk about?
Well, did you know, we're just going to do the sports report here, and there's not much going on, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about stuff being canceled. They were mentioned this morning that the Olympics, they have the capability of postponing them, not canceling them if they don't want to. They said the contract is for 2020, but it doesn't say it has to be that 2 weeks. So I would hope that if the virus is still a scare, that the virus is like gone by September. I don't see why we wouldn't have an Olympics, would you?
Very, very interesting point you make there, Chief. They're looking at either the NHL's looking at alternatives. There's some discussion about the NCAA perhaps playing games in front of no crowds. I don't want to make any statements that I don't really believe in. But, through my research and through the people that I've talked to, my conclusion is the coronavirus is here to stay. Okay? It's like you have flu, you have measles, you had polio. Different diseases are created over the period of time. And, so all this attention on it right now, I mean, this could go on for a long, long time because the disease is out there. We don't know how it was created. We don't have a vaccine, and we don't have a cure. So from a medical standpoint, it's here to stay. It could be here for ever. So you just have to conduct yourself in a way to be able to deal with it. And a lot of people make the comparisons with flu and this, that, and everything. I think it's a harsh reality for people of the 21st century and moving forward that it's here to stay.
Well, I think you're... Now, when you say here to stay, measles, well, smallpox is gone. Measles should be gone. But like a type A influenza is not gone. It comes and it goes. A cold is not gone. It comes and it goes. You're saying it's going to maybe be in that category?
Yes, sir.
Why? Why do you say that? When the SARS was a coronavirus, it made it and left. I got a good question. We have Mr. Mike Hart here as well. He's on. When SARS goes away, this is a really dumb question. Where does it go? You can't kill every last microbe of the thing. Does it just get down to a level that all of a sudden it can't infect people anymore, or what?
Well, I think what happens is a lot of these actually stick around for a long time. They get passed around, and I don't think the influenza goes away. I think it just rounds down to a small number of people. Maybe it mutates, but I don't think it goes away.
No, I don't think it does either, right? I mean, that's what you're talking about, Joel. Every year they chart the influenzas. There's how many type A flus that are down in Australia and those kinds of places, and they try and make a vaccine that matches up to the ones that are going to make it up here. But we don't try and close borders and stuff. I mean, clearly if it was smallpox, you would. Mm-hmm. Now this one, it seems like if you're older, it's not good, boys. Especially if you've been a smoker and have lung problems. If you're younger, it doesn't seem to bother you. If you're women, doesn't seem to bother them as much as guys. Now, some of that in China seems to be because guys smoke way more. Well, that's one off the cuff reason. Nobody knows. I mean, it's not, as Milton Friedman used to say, it was not rigorously tested. But they think the men's lungs in China are in a little worse shape than the women's, generally, because of the smoking. But now why would you think if it is a question of sanitation, all this other stuff, why, first of all, do you believe it? Why are the number of cases in China dropping and other places going up? Or do you think they're just not reporting them over there? The hospitals are full and nobody else is going.
And, you know, part of that is I don't know if they can report everything because it's really hard to test for it. It was just a news story that I watched this morning on that. And, you know, the CDC is working on getting test kits out to all these doctors around the country. We just don't have them ready. As far as China goes, with the numbers coming out, I have a hard time believing that they've leveled this off yet. It seems like the fear around the world has spread quite a bit. And I haven't seen really one expert come out and say this isn't going to be a problem, or one expert come out and say in the next 3 weeks this should be gone. In fact, every expert I've watched, so-called expert, whatever, you know.
Wait a minute. We're real experts here.
That's right.
No, I'm not an expert.
I've watched...
Gentlemen.
I've spent a lot of time researching. Yeah, sure. I've spent a lot of time researching this, and there is real fear to be had around this. But there's, we haven't seen this before, so we don't know how this is going to turn out. Go ahead. Sorry to cut you off.
Go ahead, Paul. Joel.
No. I mean, the point that he made about the testing is excellent because we really don't know how many people in the United States have it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, the symptoms, someone can have it and have very, very mild symptoms and not even be going to the hospital. It has, it's symptomatic in different people in different ways. So we have no actual way to know. There could be... You still there, Chief?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh,
AB's probably tracking down Kenny. She's probably tracking down Kenny.
There's thousands of people affected in the United States right now, but their symptoms are so mild that we don't know it. And, they'll care, how many people have flu and colds that don't go to the doctor?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, the number of testing kits available is low. And so it's not, it's such a big unknown, in the market. And for me, from a translating this to a market perspective, markets do not like uncertainty.
Right.
This is uncertainty with a capital U.
Mm-hmm. So we got to head off to Kenny. Hey, but if you go to a Pistons game, or as AV would say, a Pistons game, if the player won't high-five you or sign your autograph, it doesn't mean he doesn't like you. It's because that's what the league told him to do now. No,
I'm still going to games, Chief.
No high-fives, no autographs.
You can't scare me. Right. I'm still go blue. I'll talk right. to you guys next week.
And here's Kenny Pulcheri in his surgical gloves. Just because he thinks it might be communicable over the air from us. What do you think, Kenny?
I missed what you said. What do you think?
Are you wearing your surgical gloves and your mask as you're talking to us?
No. No, I'm not wearing my surgical gloves. As a matter of fact, I'm in my bathing.
Oh, God.
I don't know if we want to know this
story. Is this a thong or just a regular one?
A beautiful day here in South Florida. What can I tell you?
Oh, I can imagine, yeah. Looks like it's
anyway, pretty not yet, but all the cases that have been in Florida are on the other side of the state, up by Tampa and stuff. Nothing has yet come to the East Coast, although, you know, let's be serious. It's going to come here, whether it's today, tomorrow, the day after. Someone here is going to get it. It's going to go. We all recognize that. I think anyone who thinks it's not coming, you know, to a state near them is probably not really paying attention, but one way or the other.
Do you believe the amount of cases going down in China, or just the people are hanging into it and they're going to work and they're not going to report it?
Yeah, I'm not sure that, you know, you can believe the data out of China. Certainly, they don't want to. They're trying to calm the fears, but I'm not necessarily sure that, you know, whatever China says, you can really take straight on. You know, on anything, whether it's on coronavirus, whether it's on the macro data, whether it's on whatever it is, you know, you got to take everything with a grain of salt. But one way or the other, look, we've been talking about it more. People have been certainly well aware that this is coming. It's here already in this country, as it has been in other countries. And now we just heard that the G7, look what happened to the Dow. We just heard that the G7, that crisis conference call they had this morning, is lots of word, but no coordinated action. So, the central banks so far around the world, other than the Reserve Bank of Australia, which cut rates this morning or last night, the coordinated action is not happening out of the central banks around the world, at least not at the moment, right? Mm-hmm. Because, look, we talked about this last week, too. What's a rate cut going to do to stop the spread of the virus? It's going to do nothing. It's nothing. You know, is it going to do anything to blunt the economic impact? Maybe, but I still think the economic impact is short-lived, right? Yeah, it might be the first quarter, might be into the second quarter, but you know, after that, it's not destroying demand, it's just delaying demand. So I think it all comes roaring back. And I think that's what a lot of people are now thinking, although there's a group of people, you know, Goldman at the top of the list calling for this emergency meeting and this 50 basis point cut, you know, emergency and another 50 basis point cut by the end of the year because, you know, that's what Goldman says has to happen. I'm not buying it.
That's a great analysis, Kenny. I completely agree with you that
You're not supposed to agree. It's radio, for God's
sake.
Well,
I agree with him on the fact that, you know, the Fed's hands are tied. But in the event that this thing gets really bad, the Fed has to act. I think that's the only option is for them to, you know, lower rates.
I would agree
if it gets really bad, but I'm not necessarily sure. Listen, it feels ugly right now because I think there's no clarity around it and there's some uncertainty about how people get it and what we're going to do to slow it down. I get that. But, you know, it's not like there's hundreds of millions of people that are infected and dying. It's not the bubonic plague.
But even if you did, right? Even if you did, why would that, if anything, you'd have way more liquidity than you needed. There's nobody who's not getting a loan right now because the money's not available.
And that's exactly right. And if you cut rates, and if they cut rates by 25 basis points, is that really going to change the, is that really going to cause you to go out and buy a new house or buy a new car or companies to invest in capital expenditures? I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all.
Just remember two facts that I don't think you want to say this on the air, Kenny, the real TV air, is the last year in terms of their own currency, the Venezuelan Stock Exchange was up 220,000%. And in the Weimar
Republic. 220,000%?
Yeah, and everybody else's currency, it was down. And in the Weimar Republic, it went up from, the market went up from 500 to 1 million in terms of the currency. So these guys can drive the market up all they want by sprinkling dollars in the infield, but it doesn't create any kind of wealth, and it doesn't create a cure either.
No, that's correct. And it doesn't create a cure. And I think cooler heads are prevailing now, saying, listen, it's not gonna stop the spread of this thing, and it's not gonna create a cure. So, you know, rates are already artificial. I still say they're artificially low. Maybe I'm the one who's off base here. But, you know, at 1.5% in this country and negative in other parts of the world, what has that done negative in other parts of the world? Japan's been negative for 30 years, and look where they are.
Kenny, what do you think, you know, might feel free, but what do you think the stuff like they just stopped the Housewares convention here in Chicago? Now we're talking 53,000 people.
Well, you know, yeah. What I notice here is, you know, if you're talking about the market, last week was the first time we saw this priced in. Or you can make the argument it was there, but if you look at the volatility index of VIX, VIX, it was sitting around 15 for a long time. I mean, it really, this flu thing, at the end of January is when you can say it started maybe trickling into the, you know, into the market.
Kenny, if you didn't know, Mike's an expert on the VIX.
I spent a lot of time watching it. But, you know, we saw this VIX spike to the highest level that we've seen since 2008. So it's a real precursor to the amount of fear that's out there. There's a lot. Can there be more fear? Well, think this. Well, in 2008, the VIX went to 80. Right now, we went to a high of around 42. So we're about half the volatility that we saw in 2008 is being priced in the market right now. Where are we next week or the week after? Who knows? One thing about volatility, it has a tendency to contract. So, you know, rather than go out there and buy volatility, I would be careful playing with the VIX and playing with it, directly unless you're doing some adjustment to your, portfolio delta.
Right.
Well, what do you mean, Kenny? You and I talk about, and virtually every week, at least it sneaks in. When is the, let's say, somewhat of a lack of some areas? I mean, airlines got to be hurting a little bit. These areas that are now all of a sudden starting to have problems, be it conventions, be it cruise lines. When is that going to have a crash with the fact that, when I say crash with some of those areas are they're pretty highly leveraged? Are we going to get a spot where somebody can't pay a debt?
Yeah, I would imagine, but I have to tell you something. I don't necessarily disagree with them, the canceling or postponing some of these big, huge events, because I think that will help potentially slow it, right? Mm-hmm. So I do agree with that. But I think there are things you can buy. Like, you know, it's so funny. My brother and sister-in-law are planning a wedding for their daughter. You know, they buy that thing called event insurance, right? In the event that something happens, they're protected. So somebody's going to end up, you know, you can do that stuff, right? To protect the venue or the organization from, you know, something like this, I would imagine.
Well, but,
I fully support, you know, when they start kind of canceling some of these big events at the moment, just because anything that we could do to help stop spread is probably a good thing.
I completely agree with that too, but I wonder where in the market all of this risk is going to get laid off. Do they just start hitting stocks and all the stocks in general, or, you know, do we see a bigger decline like in, say, airlines or resorts?
I think you're going to see a bigger decline in some of those names, but look what they did the last week. They hit everything that was out there, right? Yep. It was just with reckless abandon. It was like drunken sailors, the way they were selling the market,
totally.
where it got really out of control. And a lot of that, Mike, is directly driven by automated, I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it again, the automated algorithmic trading that just, you know, when they bail, they bail. They just hit the sell button. They don't care about price. They just need to get out. And these complex and these very complex derivative ETFs and strategies that use all kinds of leverage, and they use derivatives from around the world, and they got their finger in everything. When it all starts to come undone, look what happens. And they just hit the bail button and they sell it.
Well, Kenny,
and the market is down 4,500 points in 5 days.
Well, there's no way I would debate that, A, because you're right, but B, because I like you. But Kenny, in a couple of those days, though, you could see a pushback a little bit. By the end of the day, I've got my Dow guys up here and my transportation, all this stuff on my bazillion screens.
Yeah.
But, you know, but if we were down, you know, 3%, say, mid-morning, right?
Yeah.
And you see, like you say, the SPOOs are down, whatever's down, the NASDAQ's down, the arbitrageurs come in, or the guys doing the ETFs you're talking about, and they just spank them all. Whatever their basket is, you know, because you're buying, you know, the futures at a discount, you don't care. All you want to do is make that. But as the day wears on, and you start to get to 1 and 2 in the afternoon, you sort of start to notice some of the stocks are down 4% and some are down 2%. You know, right. As the day wears on, there's a little bit of a straightening of that. I mean,
right.
I mean, like Apple and Nike, the guys that were the China related, I think more so, were down a little more. The 3M,
right.
The 3M that makes the mask was up. You know, even though obviously people were selling 3M as part of their basket, but by the end of the day, it was the only stock up because of the masks and whatever else they're selling. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it starts to have some logic as the day wears on, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it does. I think it does, but I think at times, listen, you saw it at one point last week when it got almost hysterical, right, with the market breaking 1,000 points.
Yep.
They were just hitting everything. Everything was just getting slaughtered, right?
And
stocks that weren't even going to be affected or less affected were just getting hit. They were just hitting the button and selling everything.
And that's
because that's what happens.
Yep.
That's what happens in an ETF because you know you hit the button and it just tells everything
Mike,
in the portfolio with no regard.
Can I ask a technical question, Mike, with
sure.
Kenny while he's still here?
Yeah.
How do you? I should know this, by the way. Really should know this. And then one time did. How do you even figure out where the close is on Friday night?
Well, you look for the settlement. So we go to the SPX and see where they settled, and that's where we're going to say. And then we wait for the weekend and then open back up.
But you have to decide whether you're an exercise or assigned before the settlement comes out.
Well, you're going to be automatically assigned through your brokerage, so you don't sit there and...
But I'm saying, right, the S&P futures and the NASDAQ futures must have dropped 30 points after the close. So
we call that an underwater close, which we did see. A lot of people speculate what an underwater close means, and actually there's two sides to the sword here. Some people think it means they're getting rid of the rest of their inventory and they're done selling, and some people see it as a negative sign. So I don't think you can gain much, and we've done research on it. You can't really determine direction based on an underwater close. It's rare.
Wait, so because I explain something, but I don't know underwater. I've never heard that term before. Underwater close.
You have the SPY. It closes at 3, but the SPX continues to trade, and then it settles. So really, it's both the SP 500, but you have one product trading.
Well, one of them
15 minutes longer.
If it trades
below where the SPY close, that's an underwater close.
But one of the big guys it was either the Russell or the Qs. Was one of the big guys went out at 3 o'clock exactly on the strike and then continue to trade after. But are you comfortable being short something that you're not going to get assigned on either one? Personally, I
right now in this type of market, I'm really not comfortable being naked pretty much anything. I'm looking to find my risk at this point, but still taking advantage of volatility. I'm doing that through the options market. I'm doing that by selling options, but I don't recommend everyone just go out there and start selling options. I do it in a defined risk manner. So learn what a vertical spread is before you even touch options.
Well, and also we were talking earlier before you guys came out about when you look at the straddle at the end, you if you want to trade, you're a little behind off on the E-minis, you can buy the straddle for the week and at least have protection on either side up to a certain number. Then your goal is, if I paid $15 for the straddle, is to make 20 scalping.
Sure, and I think
last week, well, maybe not last week, this week, I think you could do that, but yeah. Most of the time you can't.
We call that buying insurance, and that's what the option market was. That's why we have an options market to afford insurance.
Kenny, do you have any kind of a prediction here, or were we? We were way up earlier. Now we're now. I got the SP futures down 450. NASDAQ's
They're down because the G7 came out and said, look, there was a lot of verbiage, but there was no coordinated action. They didn't come out and say, we're lowering rates by X percent or X basis points. They said nothing of it. It's a sit and wait. It's a wait and see attitude. So I think the market's going to thrash. It's going to sell off this morning. They're going to start throwing a hissy fit because they didn't get what they wanted. Look, the Dow's already down now 220. It was up, what was it, up 220 when we started this conversation. It's now at a 400-point swing, and it's down 220.
Wow.
And the Nasdaq's now negative 70 points, and the S&P's down 30 points now, right? And so I think they're going to throw a hissy fit today because they didn't get what they wanted. But you know what? At some point, you got to let the market find its way. You got to stop
it. I agree.
You got to stop this artificial support.
Well, it'll end up screwing in the end, and well, Kenny, you and I are old, around long enough to know that you end up with people lose more money on the way down. So you don't,
right?
You don't want the market undervalued. You don't want it overvalued. You want it just valued.
But that's right. But what happens is the technology will, like last week, the technology forth, swung the pendulum so far, far to the left, it was ridiculous.
I would agree. Mm-hmm. Kenny, take care of yourself. We'll talk to you next week, if not before. Right, we'll see you on TV. SP Futures, I got them down 5. NASDAQ Futures up 17. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Mike Hart here with us, S&P Futures. Mike, the stuff was nice and calm to the upside till you came in.
I know, interesting.
I don't know if there's a correlation there, but... what exactly you do you write an article once in a while for Luckbox, but you're not exactly with them.
That's right. Yeah.
You teach a lot about the VIX and other stuff, so you're not exactly registered, so you can teach.
Exactly correct. I'm not registered, so I can give my opinion. A lot of times registered, if you're registered, you have to be cautious, more cautious about what you say. Not that I'm, throwing out ridiculous stuff that should be regulated. It's just if I get regulated, then the amount that I can say becomes regulated. So
that's
I'm not
because the regulators are not so hot.
They're not so hot. And, so not to go into conversation about that, but another aspect of what I do is I run a daily show that is a half hour long, and I talk about options trading and, types of trades that we can put on.
Which is, that's a lot of fun, because I think you need to, now, actually, as a regulated person, I could do that, okay, but you'd have to be very careful. You'd have to be, people would have to sign up for it. And this is a way to do it, actually. I mean, I would, like, in other words, if we did it through a podcast, I don't know if they'd want our faces on the podcast, but yours maybe, but you'd have to have everybody walk through the ODD to say they'd read it before they listened. That type of thing,
Yep. And we don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to do any of that.
I don't have to prep so much as
right.
Making sure every line is correct.
But you can give. I think you can give general education. The thing is, if ever you write anything down, and it's all scripted, then the script has to be approved at least by your guy.
Absolutely. And the other thing, the big reason is I give out trade ideas, not tips or advice. Trade ideas. So you can follow my account if you'd like. It's on Tastyworks platform. And I work for Tasty Trade.
Because the strange part of it is I don't somehow or another this all blends together with this. As a broker, you're supposed to know everything about your person, and if they lose money, and yet if you're an electronic firm, you don't know anything about anybody. Whatever they write down, that's what they do. As long as they really know what to write down, you could be, 100 years old in a cellar somewhere, never traded in your life. But if somebody coaches you how to put something down on an electronic thing, oh yeah, I've traded this before. Nobody checks.
Well, I think there's reasonable expectations around why they would have rules like that in place. But sometimes the rules itself make it difficult to conduct business.
Well, sure, and also. I don't have any Twitter accounts or anything like that. But I have a LinkedIn account, but I just have it. I don't ever say anything in there because I don't want anything to be considered. Because if it's over, so what's it, over 20 people or 15 people, then it's communication to customers, right?
Right. I have 7,500 followers. I tweet all the time.
Yeah, you'd be. We have like 4,000 followers on Facebook for Stocks and Jacks, but Maddie does that. I never once been into the site. That's his spot, not mine.
Well, social media and trading have really blended together, and a lot of social media is where a lot of trade ideas come out of social media, so it's a great way to stay engaged.
Well, when I used to teach a lot of options back in the... First, I taught them for the exchange back in the 80s. I was one of the market makers at... And then as a firm, we did it, and then for a short period of time. And then when we became a brokerage firm, we stopped doing all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we would go to other people's seminars, and we would give a talk. My brother Dan and I, we would give a talk on our Protect and Index program, which was all approved and everything else. I say approved, it was ready. We had it approved by our people, and actually FINRA looked at it, or that day, the NASD. And it had all the options involved, written, it had all that stuff in it. Whatever you needed to do, it was in there. I went all the way to Washington to get the thing, approved. And so we would do that, or I would give a talk, or Dan would, about order execution. How do you get the most out of your broker?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, what's the difference between a limit order? And that's stuff you can do. So we would do those things. But we would never give out any kind of, if somebody asks you...
Well, in that capacity, buying insurance... that's what the option market is. It's it's a way of insurance. And as an active trader, we kind of use the example of an insurance company, but you can be a seller of options and act as the insurance company. So that concept really came from the floor of the options exchange because you had all of the traders down there taking the other side of the risk that people are buying the insurance for. So there's a natural premium that has to be in for the sellers, Otherwise, you wouldn't give up your right for unlimited profits.
Well, but the weird part is when you talk about insurance, everything else that people do, basically, is insured. We were talking earlier about people insuring their cruise trip, for God's sake.
Right.
And then people would never, I'm not talking about liability insurance because God knows where that gets, people wouldn't drive their car out of the garage without collision insurance. Even I have it on mine, and it's a 20-year-old truck. But I still, the thought of me driving down the block without collision insurance, what if somebody rams into me and I got no truck? You know, I want something. Did I go get a new one? I mean, but it's certainly nobody would ever go without fire. When's the last time you know anybody had a fire?
I don't know.
But I mean, everybody knows that, especially in a new neighborhood or any, you know, even a neighborhood that's pretty well built, you're way better off. Were your parents ever track goers?
Yeah, I went to the horse races, the dog races, and the car races.
Do you know the slang from the day, the chalk and the?
No, I actually don't. Really, I don't
know.
Chalk
is the favorite.
Yeah, okay.
You know what the term "booking your bet" means?
No, I don't.
If
I don't know, I don't think I know the jargon from.
See, now you learned something today. AV, I know those. I know this, but the excuse me, you'll claim. If we go to the barber shop and I see you getting your hair done, you know, or mowed or whatever you want to do, chopped up, and you say, "Hey, Tommy, you going to track? Yeah, well, here's $20. Put it on, put it on old Nag in the fifth."
Mm-hmm.
And I look at old Nag and I go, "This thing's never going to win." And I'll say, "I'll just keep the 20." Now, of course, I got to pay you,
right?
If so, that's called booking the bet.
I like it.
Yeah, so
yeah. I've booked a lot of bets in my day.
Oh, see, you didn't even know you did. But I'm saying is that the mantra through the industry, mainly because the Schwabs and the people like that, they don't think anybody should ever buy insurance. They want to charge you 1% a year to buy you 50 stocks, and if the market goes up, they're heroes, and if it goes down, it's because the mantra is not there. The people have the mentality that in the end, if you hang on long enough, you're always going to be a winner.
Where
nobody thinks that if you hit a tree with your car, that the car is somehow going to fix itself.
Yeah, I mean, Chief, I completely agree. I think it's the way that you buy insurance that's changed for your underlying positions. It's all about return on capital. At least this is, our philosophy, that it's all about, you know, maximizing that return on capital. And what I mean by return on capital is the total amount that you have to put up in order to put on the trade and how much you are expected to return on that probabilistically based on the option prices, how much you're expected to return on that divided by how much you have to put up. So that's going to be your return on capital. How much money do you get back from putting up all this money? So we want to maximize that, and we want to also reduce basis. And when I say basis, I'm talking about how much you actually pay for it. For example, you could do a covered call. Real simple. You buy a stock for $100, sell a call at 105 for $1. You've just lowered the amount that you bought that underlying for to $99 because you've effectively lowered
your
basis.
You're talking as a younger, bright trader. Mm-hmm. Now, put yourself in my shoes. On the other hand, if a client walks in and the guy just retired, his wife retired, so they're not working, and he says, "I've got, 5,000 shares of Boeing."
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's trading $300. Do you want to sell your Boeing? No.
Right.
Okay, so now you're the definition of a concentrated portfolio. You have no other income. You have nothing else. Now, do you insure the Apple or not insure the Apple? Now, or Boeing, sorry. And if I were to say, "Boy, you got a risk here. I mean, we got a worldwide pandemic and we got jets on the ground. I mean, it's not like these guys are smooth sailing." The other point is, of course, they are a monopolist and probably will come back, and the government seems to have their backside and every other part of their body. So they'll give them more military stuff to make it up, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So by and large, what if the guy says, "What would you do?" I said, "Well, if it was me, I'd buy some insurance."
Mm-hmm.
So for 3 years in a row, we went out a year and bought the puts. Now, if you buy the puts, granted, you're paying money for them, mm-hmm. and you really hope that the stock, you paid, $10 for the puts or 15 or whatever it is, probably more now with the volatility where it is. What you really hope is the stock is 400 next year, and you lost $15 in the puts, and you're only up 85, but so what? It's better than a sharp stick in the eye.
Totally agree. That's one way you could do it. The other way you could do it is, rather than buying a put, which we know is going to decay because there's a natural theta decay that occurs with time, what we could do is sell a call. Now,
that's our protecting index program.
That's going to protect us to the downside by whatever we sold that call for. And the actual idea, now, this is where people get hung up on the covered call, is you have that 3,000 shares of Boeing, and you say, well, I've had this for 15 years. I've been holding this. This is my retirement, and I don't want to lose the stock. And that's what happens when you sell a call. If the price goes way up and goes through your call, you've given up that unlimited profit.
Then now it becomes my stock's up 50, your call is down 30.
Right. So you only make money the appreciation up to that short strike plus whatever you sold it for. So you have to, I guess what's nice about that is it lowers your basis without a doubt, and it also it gives you the ability to increase your return on capital over
time.
But
it also depends on the client.
It does.
Because if the client fully understands and is, it gets very difficult. But even if you keep it simple and just bought the insurance, and it was 10 years from now, all of a sudden, somebody says, well, would you buy puts for this guy for 10 years? The stock never went down. You shouldn't have bought the puts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what if it was Sears? What if it was United Airlines? What if it was Bear Stearns?
And the tough part about buying puts is usually people buy puts when there's a lot of fear out there in the market. Volatility is basically, when it's high, option prices are very high. So if you're buying protection, it's kind of like being on a beach, having an apartment there, and the hurricane's coming. If the hurricane's already coming and you're trying to buy protection, the insurance company is going to put a huge premium on that.
But even now, if you go out far enough, if you go out for like a one-year leap put, the volatility is nowhere near as high in the leap as it is in the stuff next week.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is you don't, every New Year's Eve, you don't seem like a tight-fisted sort of guy. I don't think you and your pals and your family and your wife. By the way, did you get married or is this week?
I did, right here.
Hey, good for you. Good for you.
Thank you. I was in Las Vegas. It was fantastic.
Good for you. Hope you didn't come back with the virus.
I hope so too, but I wouldn't know for a couple days.
That's right. But you would never. Do you guys have a New Year's Eve party where everybody like does nothing but whine that they bought collision insurance, they didn't wreck their car?
Not my friends.
But now people will, oh, my God, why did I buy these puts? The stock didn't go down.
Well, sure, and if you're buying puts, you literally are just buying insurance. You shouldn't be expecting to make money on it. In fact, if you own the stock, you don't want your puts to start making money.
You don't want to make money out of it.
Yeah, you don't want to make money out of it. All it's protecting you against is a downside move, so you expect to lose that money if you buy it. That's the difference with selling it. You're giving up all of that upside. All that upside profit that you could make if you didn't sell a call, but you're getting paid for it, and you're getting paid a fair amount based on the market.
Right. Well, the world has not come around to you should naturally. Now, if you were 30 years old and you've got a couple hundred shares here and a couple hundred shares there, and you're starting to build your portfolio, and you've got 35 years left to work, I would not recommend, puts on everything.
I agree. And from a trading perspective, there's a lot of traders out there who are just trading options now, which makes it a whole different ballgame. So younger traders with less, we are seeing a lot of younger traders with less capital coming in and playing with the options, but they're doing it with $2,000 accounts, not $1 million accounts.
When I had my first account on the trading floor, I saved up. It was either December of 80 or January of 81. I forget. I'm sure somewhere in the bowels of the CBOE could tell me. But you had $10,000 to open up an account. I opened it exactly $10,000. it was a brown badge account, and the idea was to learn the business, to see if you could, in a crowd, are you afraid to pipe up when you're bid or offered it.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes kind of a really long time. It's really, the first, and of course I didn't make a trade my first day, right?
It's intimidating.
Well, on the second day, I finally bought a five lot, and guess what? The entire crowd cheered. It was my first trade. So then you sit there and you go, oh my God, I got this five lot, And plus, the stuff didn't trade for crap, you know, and the brown badge stocks. I think my first trade was in Champion or something.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, everyone remembers their first floor trade.
So I ended up staying there for like 2 days before that particular option traded again. And of course, you know, spin forward 6 years where I'm in the OEX, and this is before you had computers, before you had handhelds, right, anything. Then, of course, then there was a point where, okay, I just bought 50 of these. Now I sold 30 of those because I pretty much had the deltas and everything in my head, because you didn't have handheld stuff telling you where your new graph was. Or, you know, if I don't do these, I got to get these out of the book.
A different ball game entirely.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you've got the amount of directions you could go was kind of how good of a trader you became. Some guys only traded butterflies. Somebody only traded reversals, conversions.
Right, I think that's what you had to do.
Right.
Because, let's be honest, like none of the more complex strategies really existed.
They
existed, but they weren't really the trades that everyone was
picking up. I'm going to say that despite what a lot of younger people think, there's no such thing as a new invention since 81 when I took the Marty O'Connell's courses. I mean, everything is...
It's all been there, I agree.
I mean, the only thing that's changed dramatically is nobody cares about put-call parity because there's no interest rates.
Well, maybe no one cares about it, but it does exist.
Right, but I mean, it does, but there's no spread between your long interest rate and your short. So there was a natural spread on everything. What I'm talking about is a conversion is where you're long stack, long put, and short call.
Yeah, and you know, with the added liquidity that we're seeing compared to years ago, with the added liquidity, a lot of those sort of option arbs are completely disappeared.
Well, with the when you say liquidity, mm-hmm. I'm going to say that there, like last Thursday, Friday, there was zero liquidity. But we went at it. I mean, in a lot of the stocks, even some of the indexes. But for my clients, is one back in 2008 and some of these other times in 99 when we had stuff for clients, and all of a sudden you wanted to roll your puts down because you had the put protection, but obviously the thing's way down, you want to roll them. We'd see the spreads were no good. I mean, everything went $2-3 wide.
Mm-hmm.
And, you learn, and even in my age, you learn, and, you say, okay, well, I can't do a trade in here.
Sure. But
that's wrong.
Well, you know, when you have a market that's, you know, volatility spike majorly and the magnitude of the move, that's the important part. How much has it moved is going to lead directly to volatility. A lot of people think it's price movement. Like the market goes up, volatility has to go down. Right. That's not actually
case.
The market, it's all about the magnitude of the move and the velocity of the move. So how fast is it moving and how big is it moving? That's going to lead into volatility. But if it's moving big and fast, the liquidity that you want and expect to be there is not going to be there because, hey, things are crazy. People don't want to get in and make a tight market. They'd rather be on the edges. So it gets wider and wider the more risk we see, which maybe has led to some of those flash crashes. That's what we've alluded to.
Everybody's out of the way. There's no standing orders.
Yeah, if everyone pulls their bid because, you know, everyone's long and trying to get short now, you're going to have a funnel rush for the door, and there's not going to be enough people to get through.
Well, we did on Friday and got some really nice fills. I'm not, you know, patting myself on the back or anything, but the guy who does the stuff for me, Jim, who does a terrific job, he goes, I can't get crap done here. I said, just figure out where you want to do the order, add a little something to it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be a little greedy. Put the damn thing in there. For us, now there's somebody on the other side searching for a way to get short, and we want to get long.
Absolutely.
Right?
So everyone wins there.
Somebody's going to see a spread. It's way better than the machine's showing. The machine's saying 2 bid at 6.
Mm-hmm.
So let's put something in there, you know, at 4.5, you know, by and large. And he says we got filled right away. Mm-hmm. It's way better than what you're showing, even though it looks like you can't do anything. Put it in there. Somebody might want it.
Absolutely. And, you know, we saw a ton of that. Even look, I don't know, 2 weeks ago at Tesla, we saw the same thing. We saw really wide bid and ask, but there was a market trading in between.
Right. Yeah, as soon as you put something in there, somebody grabs it.
Yep.
But now you can't be doing that. You know, you got to be careful in the market. Oh, God, the market orders, don't forget that. I mean, but there's a reason why. Mm-hmm. I still think that people either need a good educator like you or a decent broker. You can't be doing market orders through Schwab or Fidelity doing this crap.
I completely agree. I don't think either one of those platforms are set up for active trader as much as more passive trade, which it's just too schools of thought, and they're both they both have their merits. And I'd actually argue you should have both going on in your account. Like the idea of, you know, you should never over leverage yourself, which you could easily do in the options market.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, going to someone to help you through that process, I think, you know, there is definitely something to be said for the advisory groups out there. It depends on your, you know, how much do you want to be involved in your own finances, and how much do you say, well, it's a lot of work, and I don't feel like, you know, I don't feel like spending my time looking at this.
But in a bull market, everybody's a genius.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you hear constantly in Fast Money and those kinds of places on TV where they'll say, and this is not a, it's not a horrible strategy at all. It's just, it's the ever-changing marketplace. I mean, if somebody were to say, okay, Apple's trading 301, right? And no, I have a lot of clients that have Apple, okay? So last week, the 200 puts in, like, next January were, like, $7 bid.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, it's unbelievable. So you could say that, and people do on TV. They say, now, first of all, you can even do this in an IRA. I mean, you can sell a cash-secured put.
There you go.
For 200 bucks, as long as you have enough to buy 1,000 shares or 100 shares if you do a 10 lot. You got to buy 1,000. If you know, as long as you have the money to buy 1,000 shares of Apple at 200 bucks, you can sell that put. It's not. It's the same as putting putting $200,000 exactly in your account and putting a $200 bid in for the
right
stock.
And if so, you can do that cash secure in your IRA. If you have a margin account opened, you can do that with much less leverage. You don't have to put up all the money.
What
to
it is,
put it on.
It is, well, right. But if you're an IRA, you do.
If you're an IRA, it has to be cash secured.
But I mean, but you are.
But just going along with that, so everyone knows, if you sell a put, you're bullish. You actually want the market to go up,
right, or stay steady,
or stay steady, or at least not go below 200. So that's what selling a put means. But where are you going, Chief?
Well, what I'm saying, there's two issues with that. Is one is if you have so many of these there and you did it on margin, the 2008 crash, and a guy shows up after the show, and he goes, "I got my thing at Schwab. I think it was Schwab." He shows me his portfolio. I go, holy bleep, Batman. He's got like live positions in 20 stocks. I mean, when I was on the trading floor trading the OEX, I had two guys. We put stuff in all over the floor. So we had spreads in probably 40 stocks. But when I say spreads, half of them are time spread. I mean, if I were to ask my guys and they would have a tip of their tongue, okay, which ones do we have to have a problem with today? There'd be like four of them. You know, where you're bid below the strike and offered above the strike and that kind of maintenance.
Yeah.
This guy had like 20 of them. And I go, I could give you my two best clerks, and it would take them 2 days to straighten this out.
Yeah.
I said, plus, I think you're debit now. And the dude goes, it's worse than that. I committed to put up $1 million for a condo at Michigan Avenue. I go, not out of this account.
Yeah. Well, that unfortunately, a lot of people found themselves the same position.
S&P futures up 15, NASDAQ futures up 71. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold. The idea being that that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and that's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Morrow. He is Mr. Mike Hart. She is AV on the board. Mike, this bleep is moving, as I used to say on the trading floor.
It sure is.
Came in, we were up 20, and then we were down 20 or more because when the G7 said they, here's the latest. Now, they promised to use policy tools but offer no specific action to combat coronavirus. Well, the G7 are they doctors? Last time I checked, what would they do to correct? Well, there's already enough money. There's already enough money in the system anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The S&P futures now they're up 11. That's how quick we're moving.
I mean, the idea of adding more money to the system is something to have a conversation about.
Well, it has to do with the president does not want another week like last week in the stock market. Neither do the one percenters. We're down what? How many trillion dollars we lose? Nasdaq futures up 72. As they said in the Onion, America desperately seeking another bubble. Right?
I did see that.
Dow futures up 145. Over in Europe, DAX up 242. That's 2%. Now, they're catching up a little from us yesterday, of course. FTSE up 108, 1.6%, as Boris Johnson is running around in his yellow coronavirus outfit, talking about the closing factories and the army stepping in and God knows what. Gekaron up 79, 1.5%. I think if we close the PTI for today, we have the Army come in and trade for people. I don't know if that would work out so high. Nikkei down 261, 1.2%. Shanghai up 21.7%. Hang Seng down 6. So we got one way down, one way up, and one flat. So I don't know if that's telling a smudge of anything. Bonds, these things are wild, aren't they, Mike? 10-year yield 1.13. The Bund down back down to minus 0.59. Japan minus 0.11. Oil up $1.43, but only back to 48.18. Mm-hmm. It was 52.55 a couple weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Brent up $1.46, 52.36. Natural gas up 2 to 178. RBOB 158. Gold up another 8, 20.1603, back up over 16. But it was like 16.80 last week.
So you know, that move was unbelievable in gold.
Silver, we had good thing we had some puts on our GDX, boy, because it sure crashed. silver up 8 cents, 16.82. Copper still can't get anywhere. 257 minus 0.02, meaning 2 cents. AV, what do you got for us, Travy Weather Sports?
Good morning, friends. 33 degrees currently in Chicago. Partially cloudy in the morning, mixed sun and clouds throughout the day with gusty winds developing in the afternoon. Increased clouds with showers are expected later at night. The highest of the day is 48 and the lowest 34. In Phoenix, it's 49 degrees right now in the morning. Cloudy skies will give way to generally sunny skies for the afternoon. The sky is clear at night. The highest of the day is 74 and the lowest 49. There is no accidents reported at this moment, but the traffic volume is getting busier. Obviously, the Eisenhower East getting heavy from Western to 9094 interchange, 94 West from West Randolph down to 31st Street, Adams all the way east, Stevenson South from Harlem up to I-90 West. Chief?
The Bulls won, and we're talking about maybe pushing off the Olympics, and and if you're going to an NBA game, I know you guys you guys sit right on the floor, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
I know some of you guys do. Now, are you guys going to be insulted if the Bulls walk out and they will no longer high-five you because they think you're Jeremy?
Well, I don't think so. I think handshakes are going to be a thing of the past.
Really? What about no autographs?
Well, that would be sad.
Yeah.
Depends on how bad this gets, but I mean, do we start changing everything? Well, I think it depends on how long this lasts, and that's what no one really has a handle on right now.
What about sex? we getting rid of that too?
Sex?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not getting rid of it.
Well, you can't. You just got married.
Yeah, exactly.
See, you couldn't get rid of it before marriage anyway. I'm making light of it because I'm not really making light of it because I don't trust anything that's just mutated.
That's true. This thing's causing a lot of fear in the market right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at what volatility did last week. It spiked to 40. We haven't seen that in a long time.
I'll run this by you because you have a different point of view a lot than some of the rest of the guys. So I love having you in. Mm-hmm. My concern is I talked about it yesterday. I'm trying to go to. I'll give the Cliff Notes version, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. I used to, in my other life, before trading, I did a lot of work for manufacturing companies where I was the sensitivity analyst.
Okay.
You know what that is?
Sure. Like, you make an adjustment, and how much does that adjustment work down the line?
Right, or not work.
Right.
So if you were to come in with Chief, over at Tasty Trade, we're going to build this 40-story building. We got this much. Here's the cost, here's this, here's the time frame, you know, this mm-hmm. is the banking relationship, this is this and that, this is our, we have a construction loan of, you know, 1/prime and something. I would sit there and go, okay, well, if all of this doesn't pan out, you know, where are you on it? And say you say, we got a 10% margin for error, is that good enough?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, well, it looks to me like you think it'll be done in 2 years, you know, with your 10%, even if it's 2 years and 3 months, you're good to go, or 2 years and 4 months,
right.
Or 2 years and five.
And to me, that's the best way to make decisions in, you know, whether you're building a building or you're trading the market, using probabilities and using the normal standard deviation model. You can, you know, use whatever model you like, but using statistics to help you in decision-making is, it goes hand in hand.
Really. Well, it does, but here's what I inevitably found. I mean, this is through all kinds of stuff. From buildings, from railroad cars, to you name it. If I come back at you and say, you know what, Mike, it seems okay, because every one of these things I change, you know, the interest rate of the construction loan, the interest rate of the final loan, everything, if we change them, you know, 10-15%, we get screwed on this one, screwed on that one. We're still okay, given the cushion you got here. But you know what? Here's the problem. If we're over on the time by 2%, not 10, mm-hmm. and we're under on the interest rate by 1.5%, not 10, and we screw up on this labor cost by 2%,
mm-hmm.
the little nicks, if you put up five little nicks, they seem to compound on each other more than one big stab wound.
Sure, yeah,
and
absolutely.
And what I inevitably found was most of these things could withstand one variable getting basically its butt kicked, but not five variables getting a little spanking.
I mean, yep.
And inevitably you'd say, because that's the analysis I did for the CBOE when they wanted to buy the Pecos and we're going to build a building. Because
mm-hmm.
the controller of the CBOE, terrific guy, they didn't have an analyst on board, and I said, all right, I still remember some of that. Give me the whole plan. I'll help you. And I went through it. You guys can't do this.
Well, you know, part of it, like in trading, when we are about to put on a trade, we always do kind of that worst case analysis in our head, right?
If you can imagine a worst case.
Yeah, if you can imagine a worst case, but it's one of those things where, you know, you're adding up the five little nicks and it adds up to quite a bit. I think, you know, before you place that trade, start looking at levels and say, you know, what happens if the stock moves to this level? I don't think it will. It's a low probability that it'll move there, but it's possible. You know, maybe it's only 5 or 10% that it's going to, the market's predicting a 5%. Possibility that it'll move up to that price. You still got to weigh those probabilities and know what you're dealing with.
Well, what I'm trying to, you know, is how do you, everybody looks at the market as this great value generator.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I believe that when I came out of school, like no tomorrow. If you're a CEO of a place and you come out of the can going, oh, the stock could be down 2% without anybody even seeing you. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just how good the market was. Now, I'm not so sure, because I think a lot of this information is very hidden. In other words, I couldn't begin to tell you if some huge casino was built in where's the place over China? Where do you got them all?
Macau.
Some huge casino was built, and all of a sudden, and it just finished off last year, instead of getting loans at home, they went and got loans on dollar-denominated debt over here, from Mike and Jeff's place,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't tell you whether Mike and Jeff have this kind of money to $400 million in their back pocket. You guys might, or if Mike and Jeff had to go borrow the money from say Santander.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden now nobody shows up to gamble because everybody's afraid of the virus. These guys are just out of the gate; they don't have any money in the bank. So plus the Ryan's getting its ass kicked. So. Now, the interest payment's going to be a lot bigger than they banked on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, they miss their first interest payment to you. Now, you're charging these guys 6, and Santander is getting 3 or 3.5, so that's how you're making your money. So, okay, you got the first two payments, so you got some money in the bank, so now you can live a month or two, and all of a sudden, you don't get the third month. Well, now, you don't pay Santander or something. I mean, I can't tell in this whole mess where the first shoe is going to be to drop.
And that's the problem with the market and making sense of the computerized trade and the algorithms that are working through. What we're noticing is news seems to be having less of an impact. And I don't mean the news doesn't matter. It's
right.
It is. The market is a reflection of that. But it seems like we don't have the immediate reaction to the news that we used to have. It makes us scratch our heads and say, why isn't this getting priced in? And it really I've gotten to the point where I try not to analyze that part because there's, you know, you can make up any answer for why the market's doing what it's doing or why a particular stock is doing what it's doing. More of the stock than the market. Market's a little more rational.
Well, I mean, I think it is, except, I mean, Maddie and I argue about this all the time. Not so much argue because I think he agrees with me secretly. Is there's more quote news out there than ever before, but it's horse bleep because mm-hmm. there's less and less people writing serious news. So all it does is a few people write it, everybody copies it, and it flashes across your face in a hundred different directions.
I think that's an excellent point. Yes.
So I mean, I've yet to read anything that, it's probably there. I just haven't found it. I've yet to read anything that says, oh, by the way, United Airlines. And I'm not picking on them. I pick on them because they're the ones who went out of business last time. Mm-hmm. I pick on and say, okay, United Airlines this time is in way better shape than they were in 2008. Okay, I hope so. 9/11, not 2008, 9/11. And by the way, they have this amount of cash flow, this amount of equity, and even now, even though their most profitable routes are in China, they're still cash flow even.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they might lose a few bucks, it's the depreciation money. They're cash flow even. They're okay here. Or in another, if this keeps up for another 4 months, they're screwed. I mean,
right.
I mean, somewhere along the line here, somebody has got it, because it's not everybody. It's company specific that adds up. You can't get in the mentality that I'll just buy the spoos and sell all the stocks. Because some stocks need to be zero, and some need to be going up. I mean, the mentality, if you're an arbitrageur, yes, I don't care. I'm just getting my 10 points in the...
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, somewhere along the line here, somebody's got to say, well, wait a minute. Now, I'm asking myself the question, why is IBM down every day? What is the story with IBM and this virus? Of all the companies,
right,
I would think would have nothing to do with this thing, it would be IBM. And they've been probably the worst performer now in the last couple of weeks. Why? Yeah. Is there something here I'm missing? Or something the market's missing? I mean, I don't know. I guess the 3M being up is because they make the masks, but I don't know that either.
Right. Is it the masks? Is it potential? It could be anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, at some point here, if this moves onward, we need to identify, you for trading and me for my clients, if there's going to be a next round, boy, I sure as hell hope not, a next round of Sears, United Airlines, GM, Bear Stearns. I want to know about it behind, if I happen to have a client in there, get him the hell out, or get him puts at least.
The market's great at capturing all this news and discounting it. You know, you look at what UAL is, United Airlines, what it did last week even. It went from, I think, around 69 to 59, somewhere around there. So the market already discounted it a decent percentage, and that's where we're at right now. So I think it's the market's very fair, and that's a fair market. You can buy it or sell it, and it's accounting for all the risks. So it does give us a sense, and I completely agree, Chief. They're doing better. You know, the fact that they've only gone down, 10 or 5% or so, or 20% rather.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question. And by the way, what you just said is true 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fast backward to 2008 or 2007, and Bear Stearns had been trading 85, and the stock goes flying down. Now, in this world, when I say this world, both of us are the same. Anytime after, 1933, 1934, mm-hmm. the Security and Exchange Acts, you're supposed to have even the playing field, companies had to provide statements, audited statements, those kinds of things, correct?
Yep.
Obviously, Enron did not, right? And that's one, they mm-hmm. cheated on the stuff. They had all these companies off-book that nobody knew about, right? You could never find out about
mm-hmm.
it.
Now, it was an interesting scam.
Yeah, now, but Bear Stearns, okay, is gone from 85 to 32.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Najarian, friend forever, bright guy, says, and this is on a Wednesday, says, how could you possibly not buy Bear Stearns at 32?
I did the same thing.
Well, Friday night they're out of business. Mm-hmm. Because then I'm not going to call Pete an idiot, A, because he's not, and B, why should Pete suspect for a minute that given what companies are supposed to do, that there's 15 offshore funds with all this stuff in there,
sure,
that he has no way of knowing about?
Well, you know, Pete is, by doing that trade, is doing what a lot of traders who've been in the business for a long time do, and that is take a contrarian bet against the market. At certain points, you have people stepping in and saying, whoa, too much.
Yep.
I'm buying it here. And so that's a common trade for traders, is we take the other side. If it's selling, we're buying. If it's going up, we're selling.
Well, but, I mean, you have to sit there and go, barring anything that, you know, that the president just got, or the president of the place just got caught with the people with the, you know, underage people in Florida or something, barring something like that, how's this stock not worth 32? But I mean, it wasn't because you didn't know anything about these other places.
Right. And, you know, and I think Bear Stearns, one of those examples where fear really didn't overstate. A lot of times we say volatility overstates everything, and, you know, and it does for the most part. But you're right. 99% of the time it works, and there is that 1% of the time that it just, you know, the market was right and it went out of business. Or,
well, the Enron situation, I have I forget who the guy was. He was a client. I think he was an older dude, so he'd been dead for a while, unfortunately. I think his son or daughter was one of the group that went and audited the remains of Enron.
Mm-hmm.
I think he told me, was it 150 or 250 partnerships that were spun off the thing?
I believe it. It was a massive company at the time.
But how did those, were the profits when there was some other partnership that the owner owned and not the shareholders? And You know, the first company to do that. It's one of the things why I love studying railroads.
Mm-hmm.
People say, "Well, Chief just wants to be in there and drive one of the damn things." Well, by the way, I do. just for the actually, there's a guy who's supposed to be going to take me on a ride in a locomotive, and he keeps threatening to, and he never does. Every dirty trick that anybody is contrived. It's almost like you're married now. I can tell you this: you cannot invent a new fetish.
That's fair enough.
Somebody's invented it before. So no matter what it is, no matter how bizarre you think it is, believe me, somebody's invented it before.
And it's probably worth $500 million on the internet.
Oh, God. Well, if you did get a new one, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know how you could. But anyway, so every little trick. I mean, when the people with the Central Pacific, the guys who are the owners, they get the contract, they're building the damn thing, and they go, wait a minute, we don't really want to do this. Let's form another company that we get the money from our shareholders and we pay the other companies to mm-hmm. actually put in the track.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to pay them more than we're getting in. So the first company that these guys own 10% of goes bankrupt, and the second company makes out like a bandit because now they own 40% of the second one.
Well, part of it is just adding complexity.
Well, but a lot of that is, I mean, that's Enron 101, right?
Right, that's Enron 101. You know, you add enough complexity to the system that traditional auditing methods don't catch
right.
The type of accounting that's going on. And a lot of these firms can get away with it for a long time. But, you know, hopefully there's a day of reckoning for all those who are kind of scamming the system.
But I won't say your buddy. I should. Your buddy, Jim, what's his name? Kramer.
Yeah.
I mean, when I can remember, and you probably can too, when Sears, what's the bozo that took over Sears? Eddie Lambert?
Mm-hmm.
He took over Sears, and he says, Eddie Lambert's brilliant, he came from Goldman Sachs, this and that, and the other thing. Just buy this place, he's a brilliant real estate guy. And you know, I'm not so sure, Mike. Well, first of all, I need 15 guys, which you guys have over your place that we don't have here.
Mm-hmm.
Where exactly can I go at Sears back in the day and walk into their corporate office and say, you know what? I'm an analyst, and now you're talking about all this real estate stuff. Where can I get a list of all your properties?
Mm-hmm.
And then, now there's a list of 2,000 properties. And you and I, being intelligent guys, we say, give me a random number sampling of 25 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now they pop up. Here's one in God knows where. We're going to say, all right, here's a piece of property. They're on it. They own it. It's on the books for, it's depreciated down to 48 cents, and it's worth $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a good one. Okay, now here's another one. It's a lease for 20 years. And by the way, the store's not doing so hot. Nah, it's maybe not such a good one. So, I mean, how do we even get a sense of what, why would Jim Cramer or anybody like that say, you wouldn't believe how much money there is in real estate? Unless you and I went through a sampling of their entire list and had an idea of what was the depreciation load,
sure.
What was the original purchase price, and what's the current value, how could we have any idea?
We don't. We don't have any idea. What we do is we watch price movement of the market, and collectively, when you have a huge number of individuals making individual bets, what we find is it actually falls into a normal distribution. We can describe it through statistics. You know, one standard deviation, two standard deviations, three standard deviations. So we really don't look at fundamentals anymore. We look at price movement and volatility prices and option prices and stock prices.
Well, the original random walk theory, and even a monkey could beat the market by throwing darts and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The basis of that theory was, and you know this, but I mean, I hope the listeners, if they don't know, the basis of that theory was, is 1,000 firms out there had 10,000 really smart men and women with access to virtually all information that you needed to have.
Mm-hmm.
And all those people would study, you know, IBM, they'd study Exxon, they'd say, they'd price that thing just right. And not that it was right or wrong, because interest rates could go up or down, or some information could change. There were
mm-hmm.
random hits to the price. But any given moment, mostly everything about the company was, quote, known. It was analyzed, and it was put in relation to all the rest of the companies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the reason why then is a monkey could pick stocks as well as somebody else is because all these people working together with all this information available made the thing so fairly priced that you and I, even though we're smart enough to put the price up there, couldn't beat it.
Well, I don't know if that's the case entirely. I think...
Well, that was the theory.
The theory is we're creating an efficient market.
Right.
You know, is the market perfectly efficient? Well, you know, that's up for debate. But we go with the assumption that it is efficient. We need to have that assumption in order to make, you know, reasonable bets around the market.
But every time there's been a massive, basically, bleep-up in the market, not every time, but a lot of ones that I think that stand out, Sears being one of them. Mm-hmm. Now, here, if we're talking about Sears earnings, income, those kinds of things, people going to the store, this is what all our analysts can all get.
Mm-hmm.
But if Sears isn't going to tell us or anybody what's on the balance sheet and what this property is valued, if there's a thousand of us, and we're a thousand idiots, aren't any smarter than one idiot?
Sure. And, you know, part of the reason why a monkey can just throw a dart, and if you have a policy of getting long, long stock has outperformed short stock around 53% of the time. Stock market's moving higher. We call this positive drift in the stock market.
Right.
So, yes, any monkey could throw a dart and at least do, you know, okay, maybe.
Right. Well,
I mean, it all, you know,
but
it's
I'm saying,
all random.
But the flip side of it is, if you take the analysis out of there, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the response to all your analysts together can't make any money because they're all good at what they do.
Yeah, that's tough. The market can stay irrational
but if you
longer than you can stay.
Right. But if you fire them all, and now nobody's doing the analysis, we're back to my serious situation. They're asking me to value this on real estate property levels. And they won't tell me what the property levels are.
Well, and, you know, I think if you fire them all, some smart person out there is going to say,
right.
you know, I'm going to analyze this and make a trade based on fundamental values. Right now, we go with the assumption that fundamentals are priced in. You might want to play the game of, I'm going to research the fundamentals and make my bets around fundamentals. It depends on your strategy.
You're too young. When Capital Cities bought ABC, and everybody said, why did they pay that much for them? And everybody going, this was really dumb. Well, it wasn't really dumb because ABC had a square block of Manhattan building that was depreciated down to like zero.
Mm-hmm.
So the value of the building was more than what they paid for ABC. And it was on the same way when, I forget who the hell bought Northwest Airlines. I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't.
But they had, back in the Tokyo craze, they owned a big building in downtown Tokyo.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of these companies actually are becoming kind of real estate companies as well. You look at McDonald's. McDonald's, their value is in their real estate.
But now, are they leasing or they own?
What's that?
Do they lease or they own? Sometimes the franchise owns it, sometimes they...
Right.
Even then, how would you and I analyze that?
Well, I mean, I think the fundamental value of the properties need to, you know, be put on the balance.
But, I mean, do they own... First of all, I wouldn't know how many of them, what's their percentage of franchisee versus owner.
Oh, you and I value them? We just look at the stock price and we look at the volatility level and we, you know, and I like your way of looking at the straddle price as sort of a starting point.
So what are you, we're up 875.9, the NASDAQ's back up 55. G7 disappointed, we crapped out on that, we came right back. Because we're thinking our Fed's not going to disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a buyer or a seller?
Today's an interesting day because we're coming off a big rally yesterday. If they sell today, I think we could be looking at a lot more volatility in this market. Right now, if I had to take a side, I'm getting long right now.
Really?
Yeah. I'm playing the contrarian bet.
You wouldn't have rather gotten along yesterday morning and sell here.
No, luckily I didn't. I'm glad I didn't come on the show yesterday. I might have said the same thing.
Oh, so. God. Well, S&P futures up 9.25, and NASDAQ futures up 54. Thank you very much. It was fun. AV, good job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.